We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. This is a little bit of a different episode. We're not going to be talking about the games. The Yankees haven't played a game since we last recorded. They are playing tonight against Oakland. But with the trade deadline, you know, about a month away, we figured it might be a good time to look back at some past trade deadlines, see what the Yankees have done, see what Brian Cashman has done. Also taking a look at what previous championship teams, both Yankees and recent championship winners, have done at the deadline, because we all hope this is another championship team for the Yankees. And it's fun to look back and see what moves have worked, what moves haven't worked, and the approaches that some of these general managers have taken. Next week, we're going to be doing a mid-season GM trade deadline episode. We've always done the off-season GM episode, but Logan and Ilya are going to be teaming up with us. You know, we're going to be doing the whole rigmarole. I'm going to be laying out my plan with Logan. We're a team. And Scott, you're going to be laying out your plan with Ilya, and then we can shit all over each other's plans. That's going to be the episode next week.
Perfect. It's going to be fun. I love playing GM. I love this role. So it's and this is going to be a very, very important trade deadline for the Yankees, because clearly they have, you know, the caliber of team that could go deep into the postseason and potentially win the World Series. So it's a matter of, like, if they make the right moves, does Cashman do the right thing? Does he satisfy any depth concerns? Does he go out and make a splash for that impact player that, you know, makes a mark and is a difference maker, an X factor, if you will, in the playoffs? Big time for Cashman to shine. He actually needs this. He needs this deadline to go well for him.
Well, I think people are going to be, because it can go either way. When your team is going so well, there is an argument to be made for why you're going to change things up. Don't fix what's not broken. But that also, I think, a lot of times triggers people to be like, wait, why aren't you trying to get better? Why aren't you making moves to get better? This team can win a World Series. So I think people play both sides of that.
They do, but if he sits there, if he sits there with his hands under his ass and doesn't do anything, then he will get destroyed, because there are always opportunities to improve your team and to take advantage of what's out there on the market. And again, the Yankees are
sometimes he doesn't like the market. You know that Cashman loves talking about what the market presents him. And they're in on everything. They're always having conversations, right? He has conversations with everyone. But if he doesn't like what the market is presenting him, he's not going to pull the trigger. Like 2019, they didn't really do much at the 2019 deadline, even though that team was in first place. Throughout the season leading up to the deadline, the Yankees, they acquired Alfredo Garcia, Terrence Gore, Edwin Encarnacion, and that's really it. They didn't acquire some bigger name pitchers out there, like Greinke. Greinke got moved at that deadline.
Greinke was not an option.
Maybe.
No, he wasn't. That's been very, very well documented. He does not want to play for the New York Yankees. Not an option. People continue to shit on Cashman for not going after Zach Greinke, when in fact, he has multiple times said that I am not playing for the New York Yankees. So I don't know what you want the guy to do at that point.
Yeah, but fine. But my point is that the Yankees didn't acquire anyone of note at the 2019 deadline. And it could have been because
Encarnacion was well before it too.
That
right?
Was like middle was of a, June. It was
It was like a month ahead of it. And you know, looking at that, what it could have been, I think it was an interesting move. I think we all liked it at the time, no doubt. And he started off hot, but he addressed some things a little early there. And you know, I just think the biggest difference here is where the team is positioned currently, going into the All-Star break, you know, and then into the post or the trade deadline. This team just, it's different. It's different this year. Everybody knows that. It's different this year. The expectations are through the roof now. So there needs to be that next level. And you know, people are looking to Brian Cashman, who's on good terms with the fans right now, right? He's on good terms because a lot of the things that he did in the offseason have worked out relatively well. But this is a big moment for him.
Yeah, the Yankees also at the 2019 deadline had so many guys hurt. They had so many guys hurt throughout the season. There was the whole narrative of we're going to be acquiring all of these players at some point in the second half. Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Hicks, Luke Voit, Gary Sanchez, Greg Bird, CeCe Sabathia were all injured, and they're going to get these guys back. Edwin Encarnacion was on the IL at certain points. And Duhar, Mike Tauchman, like all of these guys went down at some point in the season. So that was another thing. It's like, well, the Yankees are winning 100+ games and they have all these injuries. So you know, maybe the acquisitions were going to be the injury guys coming back, and that obviously didn't work out. 2020.
That's the worst narrative to have. That one played out for a few years. I feel like that was a good one to lean on.
2020, they made no major additions at the deadline. Also, the 2020 season was bizarre. Last year, they made a bunch of moves. I think, you know, Rizzo, they acquired Gallo and Rizzo. Those were the big ones. They also acquired Clay Holmes, which we all didn't know was going to be Clay Holmes at that point, and Andrew Heaney, who stunk up the joint. Those are the moves that the Yankees made last year. And we liked the Rizzo and Gallo moves because we thought that was providing a different dynamic for the team. And it worked out temporarily. They went on that little August run, but otherwise, we're actually seeing, I guess, maybe more impact from that deadline this year. They re-signed Rizzo, and Clay Holmes has been the best reliever in baseball. So we're seeing impacts from last year's deadline right now. 2018, the Yankees made a lot of moves and pretty big ones too. They got Britton and Happ, and those were addressing serious needs that the 2018 team had.
So when you look at Jay Happ at the time, you know, that was a move to shut down Boston in the playoffs, essentially. The splits, if you remember, for Jay Happ that year were ridiculous against Boston. So everybody's looking at him as like, okay, this is our guy to come down and shut down that lineup. And then from memory serves, it didn't work out as they planned.
I think Jeter Martinez hit a three-run home run in the first inning.
Yeah. It didn't work out so well against the splits against Boston. But that was the intent. And I think that when you're looking at what he was looking to address that trade deadline, you know, he did what he was, and Zach Britton was a very good move. And looking at the guys that they give up, and this is one thing that you see a lot with all of these Cashman deals, is like, you're looking at the guys who they gave up and you're like, okay, what have they done since? What did we actually give up as playing Monday morning quarterback? 2020 being or hindsight being 2020, what did they give up? And when you look at specifically that 18 deadline, Zach Britton, they gave up Cody Carroll, Dylan Tate, who has become a pretty good major leaguer. He's definitely a piece in the Orioles bullpen at this point. And then Josh Rogers, J-Hop was Billy McKinney. I think Billy McKinney's played for every single team in the major leagues at this point. And then Brandon Drury, Vertigo, who's having a hell of a year right now with the Reds, by the way, coming back to the world, got some contacts that work and can see the ball.
We were all about Brandon Drury that year. We wanted him to work out so much.
I felt so bad for him too, because of the tunnel vision that they talked about. Like, I never understood how that went undiagnosed, first of all. And like the fact that guy played with tunnel vision for as long as he did, that's amazing.
How'd he ever hit a baseball?
I don't know. But now it seems like
Chris Carter hit a ball with his eyes closed. So I guess you don't need your eyes to hit a baseball.
Yeah, but you do need to play third base.
They got Luke Voit, which was a flyer. They give up Giovanni Gallegos, who was turned into a really good relief pitcher. So they didn't give up no one there. And then Lance Lynn for our guy Tyler Austin. Lance Lynn did not materialize with the Yankees. He ended up being a stud pitcher after he left New York, but yeah, some interesting moves in 18. 17, this is as far back as we went in recent years. 17 was a very interesting deadline, and I loved what they did at the 17 deadline. The big moves were obviously getting Sonny Gray, which, even though it didn't work out, how many times have we said that's a move you make again? And Todd Frazier, D-Rob, and Tommy Canley from the White Sox for Tyler Clippard, Ian Clarkin, Blake Rutherford, and Tito Polo. That Frazier, D-Rob, Canley moved helped the Yankees make the deep playoff run. They don't make a deep playoff run without those guys. And that's the type of move that I would love to see this team make. Add veteran pieces in strategic areas of your team that add depth and add needed veteran presence, needed insurance.
So the situation then and the situation now, I think, are very different, not only with where the team is, but also with roster construction, because the 1 year that we haven't really referred to because they were not in contention, they actually sold, was the year that they got much younger.
16.
That was 2016. Thank you. And 2016, it changed the landscape. It changed the roster construction of what the team looked like.
Changed they got the much future younger. Of the organization.
Yeah. That second half of 16, even though they sold, was actually one of the most fun second halves I can remember in a long time.
But it's not applicable to this year.
No, but a little bit it is. I'm gonna bring it back full circle. It was fun because the guys that they acquired and the guys that they brought up, you know, we called them young and dumb at that point. They didn't know any better. They just started winning and they did well. So when you look at what they did in 17. And added a lot of those veteran players. That's when they're looking at what they have, a lot of young guys that are playing well. They got to complement that with a lot of these veteran presence, and they plugged a bunch of holes. I don't think this year we're looking at necessarily like veteran presence for the sake of having veteran presence, because then I think that was a big piece of it. Todd Frazier came in and just like ran the clubhouse. You know, like there was Holiday was there. They had pieces that
Sabathia
that really
was still
them.
There,
and Sabathia was still there.
Gardner was obviously still there. They still had veteran guys.
They did.
I'm more talking about
they solidified a lot of it. They really
they
did
needed
solidify.
A third baseman because Chase Headley stunk, and they needed relief pitching, and they got those three pieces with that trade.
Yes,
and
but
so
those were also glaring options, glaring holes. I don't know if this team necessarily has as glaring of a the holes that you can plug like that team did.
No. They don't. They're definitely a more complete team far more complete team than 17. But I still think they need bullpen depth, this team. And they might need outfield depth.
Yeah. Depending on what they're looking for and depending on what their tolerance is for some people that are currently on the team. But yes.
Yeah, they might need shortstop depth.
Yeah, they have that in AAA.
Okay.
And AA.
So they might need some depth pieces to bring in. Like my point is, I don't see them going out, barring injury over the next month. I don't see them going out and acquiring a starting pitcher. I don't see them going out and acquiring a starter, because you don't need more starters on this team. And I almost equate it to what the Yankees did back in the back in the early 2000s and in the late 90s with those teams, because those teams didn't need overhauling moves on those teams. Those teams were ready to win a championship. You just needed something extra. You needed a cherry on top. Like in 2000, David Justice was the cherry on top to that team to get them to the World Series. David Justice was acquired for Zach Day, Ricky LeDay, and Jake Westbrook. Not nothing, okay?
Westbrook was a really good pitcher for Cleveland.
And so, but Justice helped them win a championship. He was awesome in the second half, and he was awesome in the playoffs. And the team
Left field mostly, or was he more, did he slide into the DH? Did he do both?
I think he played the outfield.
I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I think he played the outfield. But but like those types of moves are what this team needs more. It's the cherry on top. It's the depth pieces.
Yeah.
Where they're going to make an impact at some point in the second half and in October. It's not, oh, we need to acquire Jay Happ because we don't have five starting pitchers.
David Justice is not necessarily just a cherry on top. Like that was a massive acquisition at the time. You're bringing on a guy that
he
has
was near the end of his career though.
He had the ability to change. I remember the narrative actually now that we're talking about it, it was like, you know, a change of scenery could be like perfect for this guy. And it ended up being very good for him. And he was able to do very well. But no, I think that they are looking for those extra pieces. The one thing from last year that they did, which was interesting, and I could see it happening again this year, is in order for them to get Clay Holmes, if you remember, they got rid of Luis Sessa and Justin Wilson to make some room for salary. So depending on Cashman and the Steinbrenner's hard stance on how much money they can spend that goes against the luxury tax threshold, could they be moving some salary as well in order to make a deal like that they believe is a guy that will, you know, help them immediately, even though it may not be a big name person. I could see them doing a move like that too.
If you can move the salary, then obviously you do it. But if you can get a guy and it's going to cost you going over the next threshold, you do it for this team. And if you don't do it for this team and that gets out, people are going to be pissed.
So that's the thing. You're not going to nickel and dime it to go over it. You're going to go after a big splash then, right?
It totally depends, right? Like if you're adding a veteran relief pitcher, that he might be making $7 million. So you might be adding $4 million or something like that.
Yeah, so you can clear a little bit of space to still stay under. That's my point. Is like I could see them maneuvering the roster enough where they're saving some dollars here and there and adding someone to stay under that. I still think they're going to play that game. I don't think they're going to blow it out of the water. Because if they do, they might as well go after someone that does cost some money to make a bigger impact, if that's the case. If they're truly going for it and they're going to say, hey, I'm going over that deadline, don't go over it by $2 million, $3 million. That doesn't make any damn sense. You might as well crush it at that point and just get who you need. Logan.
Yeah, so now that Judge has officially signed, we know like the exact about the exact luxury tax. So they're at 262. So there's the fully thresholds are 230, 250, 270, and 290. So they're about 8 million, a little less than
that's a good amount of wiggle room. That's a lot of wiggle room.
A good amount of room. Yeah, and plus,
especially
again,
if you turn around and you get rid of Gallo or something like that.
Everyone needs like, ideally you get someone to take the $6 million that Joey Gallo.
They're not going to take the whole money, but if you can get them to take $2 million or, you know, you shaving off a couple $1 million to make a different move to keep you under, then yeah. They're already over to, you know, what is that? What are the penalties again for going over that third?
Oh God, there's so many new penalties.
They've already gone over two of them. Like
the next one isn't the Steve Cohen tax. It's the top one that's the Steve Cohen
tax.
Right,
that's 90. That's 290.
That's the one where you're paying like your arm and your leg and your firstborn in tax payments. Yeah.
So
I think the tax rate, so it says that the tax rate for 270 is 62.5%, but I'm pretty sure if memory serves that that's the one that you lose draft picks, that your draft pick gets dropped, which is like something that they've been
resisted big time. So that'll be interesting. The money, like I could see them going over that if they're already close, but there's enough room. $8 to $10 million with some shifting around is, you know, that's a solid player. That's a $20 million player. It's a $16 to $20 million player at the deadline.
call it more like 6 to 7 million, not 8, because you never want to leave yourself with no room where if budgets change at the end of the year and then you're over. So
my point is that I think that if they identify a player that's at, call it $20 million salary, they could make some other adjustments to make sure that they're slotted in there appropriately.
For
that
sure.
wouldn't affect the quality of the team.
So I was trying to think like what I was trying to think.
That puts a lot of guys at play, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. That puts a lot of guys at play.
What years have the Yankees, what past Yankees teams kind of are similar, mirror how I think Cashman's going to act at this deadline, if that makes sense, right? A team that has most of the starters set, if not all of the starters set, who has the ability and the expectation to win a World Series. What did those teams do? And like 2009, obviously, I mean, that team was an all-star lineup up and down. All they acquired at the deadline was Jerry Hairston Jr., who was a utility player, and Eric Kinski, who was a backup outfielder. That's all they did at the 2009 trade deadline, and it didn't matter. I mean, there was a really strong argument you could have made for needing to acquiring another starting pitcher, considering they only had 3 starting pitchers in the playoffs, but they didn't do it. 2010, trying to back up that World Series team. Certainly not as good as the 2009 team, but still won the division, still was expected to go to the World Series and made the ALCS. They acquired Austin Kearns, Lance Berkman, who was a fun addition because that's when Teixeira got hurt, and they acquired Kerry Wood, veteran pieces that filled holes on the team that were needed. Names, Kerry Wood, Lance Berkman are names, but they're not prime Kerry Wood, prime Lance Berkman in 2010.
No, but they were, yeah, they plugged. Lance Berkman was someone who was needed with a good bat, played first base. And then Kerry Wood was dominant in the second half of his career as a bullpen guy. So, I mean, those were solid moves. Look, I just think that this year feels different because of the fact that they haven't won anything since 2009. You know, you're in 2009, you're playing with like a relatively short drought. Like the drought is now significant. Everything is on the line here for them, including their best player, you know, with Aaron Judge. You need to maximize this year because you don't know if he's here next year. And if you don't have him next year, then your team is not as good. Pure and simple. So you better make every goddamn effort to make this team as good as you possibly can. Every stone unturned here because they almost have to overcompensate, I think, because of the situation.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
2012, the last real year that the team was competing, they acquired Ichiro, which was, you know, well past his prime Ichiro, but he had a little bit of a resurgence when he came over to the Yankees. That was fun.
The other thing about this is that there are a number of questions that are withstanding now, even still looking at how good this team has been. We don't know how the reaction to the pitch count is going to be, or how many of these starting pitchers are able to go all the way through the playoffs and then be effective in the playoffs as well. It's almost like they have to account for some of those guys really limiting their innings, almost have to account for an injury or two, especially if you're coming out, you know, relatively unscathed going into it. You got to account for some of these things, because those things will happen. And if they are, and you're not prepared for them, again, this year being different, Cashman's going to be on the hot seat. So I think he's got to almost overplay or over-index a little bit at the deadline. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I was thinking about this and you're like, not that many moves potentially, but the more I've thought about it, the more I'm thinking that he's got to be right. He's got to be right and make sure that he has enough firepower to get them through and still be this, you know, this behemoth going into the playoffs.
That's the type of move that's like acquiring Lance Lynn in 2018 or acquiring Andrew Heaney last year. Someone who is a quote unquote major league starter who you can start or put in the bullpen, start if you have to manage innings on guys. Like, that's that type of move.
Yeah, or you relegate someone that's currently on the in the rotation to the bullpen towards the end of the year, and you're bringing in someone that's a little bit more that has some substance in the starting rotation, someone that has a track record, someone that can come in there and you know damn well what you're getting from that person. So to me, that's more of like the guys that are doing great right now, awesome. Like, yes, so much fun to watch. But can Brian Cashman depend on those guys to continue this all the way through the year? I think he cannot. And I think a better bet, and I don't like talking about this right now because we're still going to be, you and I are going to be competing with our GM plans. So I feel like I'm giving you too much information right now of what's going on in my head.
I'm not
going
to craft my plans around your plans. I'm going to craft my plans to what Logan and I think are the best plans.
Right. But subconsciously, you might be affected by what I'm saying right now.
Okay. Now, if we also look at some recent World Series winners, because that's always fun to look at. Last year, the Braves made a ton of moves, and they were about a 500 team at the deadline. They acquired Jock Peterson, Stephen Vogt, Richard Rodriguez, and Eddie Rosario, who ended up being the NLCS MVP, and Jorge Soler, who ended up being the World Series MVP, all at the deadline. Those turned out to be very good acquisitions for them.
Huge.
Jock Peterson was good for them, had a huge NLDS for them. So they basically acquired three players who carried them through the playoffs.
How the hell did they turn Eddie Rosario and Cash? They got their NLCS MVP for Pablo Sandoval. I didn't, you know, like that guy's still chasing or and looking back at a cake meme rounding second base.
And Cleveland never even like got him to Cleveland. They were just like, that's it. We're cutting you.
It was a salary dump. Yeah, basically. Yeah. It was like, so that, you know, they did some damn good work at the deadline. They deserve a lot of credit there. And Jock Peterson is one of those guys who I kind of want. You bring in him, he's an assassin against right-handed pitching. I know he's having a better year. At least he was last time I checked. He's terrible against, his splits are terrible. But when you get him up against right-handed pitching, he's nasty. And I wanted him. Yankee Stadium, it's like a nice pinch hit opportunity. Play him against righties.
Is that what Matt Carpenter is right now?
Yeah, kind of.
Obviously, Peterson.
But Peterson was that guy
Peterson was
that guy. Also, you know, has some winning pedigree from the Dodgers teams that he was on. They did some really good work last year. And you know, looking at the fact that they were a 500 team and then brought these guys on and then ended up, you know, getting as hot as they did and winning, pretty impressive.
I like how the Dodgers acquired Billy McKinney in 2020. It's like to close the loop on Billy McKinney there. The Dodgers got him in 2020. They didn't really do. They also got Danny Duffy
at 2020. Not a lot of acquisitions were made. That was, again, a weird year. I almost feel like you threw it out. The Nationals did not acquire anyone that was, you know, of major substance for them in the playoffs, but weren't also the Nationals like another 500 team at the deadline?
Yeah, they got it really hot. Daniel Hudson, I mean, Daniel Hudson got the final out. He was an ODU guy. Shout out to ODU. He's the, he got the final out of the World Series. He played an impact place. And Hunter Strickland, was that before he got bad or was that he was good? Because he had nasty stuff at one point. I feel like that was an effective. They definitely bolstered their bullpen.
Yeah. But in the playoffs, they used their starting pitching for their bullpen pretty much.
Hudson played a role for sure.
Yeah. The Red Sox acquired Steve Pierce, who ended up being the World Series MVP, and Nathan Eovaldi, who murdered the Yankees in the playoffs and had a great postseason run. That one cut deep. And then the Astros obviously got Justin Verlander. That was a post-deadline. That was an August waiver wire deal. They got Verlander. Everyone remembers that. The Yankees did not get Verlander. Astros did get Verlander, and the Astros won the World Series with Verlander. So a lot of big names moving in recent deadlines have helped teams win championships.
Yeah, no doubt. And when you look at what actually the haul that the Toronto Blue Jays had in some of these trades too, they got Teoscar Hernandez for the Liriano trade in 17. And then also
Santiago Espinal for the Steve Pierce deal in 2018.
Yep.
Yeah.
And who the hell, you know, nobody predicts Steve Pierce doing the things that he did. That guy just all of a sudden took a lot of steroids and HGH or just decided that he was going to be a really good baseball player for a month and lit the world on fire.
Like,
we
see that every year, though.
Ridiculous.
We see someone.
That was extra ridiculous.
But the Red Sox were clearly the best team. They were a juggernaut all season, and they still had some guy you just picked up off the trash heap at the deadline be your World Series MVP.
I think
that happens routinely.
And I don't know if I'm correct on this, and maybe it was across 2 years, but didn't he play for every team in the AL East also? Steve Pierce did, I think. Was it that year or the year before?
That was the last team that he needed, I believe.
Okay.
So he had played up until that point in his career.
And then all of a sudden he just starts being this guy when he's playing with the Red Sox during a World Series run.
So would you say this is the biggest trade deadline for Brian Cashman since 2016?
16.
2016.
Same time. Yeah.
2016 yeah. Reestablished. Because 26, there was the whole talk about, will the Yankees be sellers? The Yankees are never sellers, blah, blah, blah. Brian Cashman clearly made the pitch to the Steinbrenners and said, we need to be sellers if we're going to turn this around. And it was like, snapped his fingers and shit turned around. The Yankees played well in the second half. They called up some prospects. 2017, they make a deep playoff run. So that worked out well for him. It's been so-so in the years since then, as far as trade deadlines go. But this year, you're marking as this is the next milestone for him. He needs to make the right moves at this deadline to help this team win.
Yep. I think it is definitely the biggest in 16. And, you know, that changed the dynamic of the team and how it was going to move forward. And it was the biggest thing about 16, you know, you could argue that 16 was a bigger deal because it was unprecedented. You know, the Yankees just didn't sell. They didn't do what they did. The fact that they gave up, you know, significant players to get younger and to, you know, position themselves better for the future just didn't happen. That was not part of the Yankee narrative ever. And he did it and did it very well that year. You know, all things considered, what he did and given the haul was very good. Some of the players didn't work out, obviously, as they do or they don't, but definitely was, you know, I think a lot of people were on his side for what he did at that point. This year is different in a different way because he needs to make the right moves to win the World Series now. And that's a big deal.
In 17, they gave up a lot of prospects. Not a lot of the prospects have worked out anywhere. So it's kind of no harm, no foul. But at the time, Dustin Fowler, James Kaprielian, Jorge Mateo, and Blake Rutherford were all top prospects for the Yankees. Yep. And all of them were traded.
Yes. And, you know, I don't know if I'm not giving 17 enough credit here because 17 was a big deal too. And I thought he did a very good job to position themselves for, and they did have a championship level team. So 17 is just like, it's salt in the wound here, because they did have a damn good team coming off of the unexpected 16 with the kids coming up and Gary Sanchez being Babe Ruth for the second, or for the 1 month really that he was there.
Couldn't even go one episode without saying his name.
Oh yeah. Shit. I forgot about that rule. The, we're talking about the past here. This doesn't count. So, but you know, that was a big move. And I thought he handled it well. I thought he did the right moves for that year. And obviously, you know, the 17 Astros for many reasons, you know, took advantage of what they were taking advantage of and beat that team. But that team was damn good. That team, if they had gotten past that game, I do believe would have won the World Series.
I don't know. The Dodgers were a wagon too. I mean, like, let's not sleep on the Dodgers that year. But
no, but I mean, I think the way that they were playing, it felt like they were going to win that year.
Yeah.
The winner of that series was going to win the World Series.
That's going to wrap it up. This was, I don't know, this was just a look back, and it's just like sort of like an open conversation as to what we think could happen and why it's a super important trade deadline, even though the Yankees don't have necessarily glaring weaknesses that need to be addressed. Again, next week, we'll be doing our GM trade deadline episode where we each lay out our plans. We will have a couple episodes in between this. We're going to be recording after the Oakland series and then again over the weekend after the Cleveland Guardians. I almost said I-words series.
Good
Scott,
job. Good job.
Anything else? You want to say Gary Sanchez's name like four more times before we get out of here?
No, but this was a
you said historical... we said Sonny Gray and Gary Sanchez in the same podcast. So that,
because we're talking about historical things that happened to this team. You can't erase them from the history of the Yankees.
So the Gary Sanchez kibosh starts now.
Now.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.